there's going to be an intimacy in terms of how we move technology forward, where some things will be mass scale, where it's the same stamped out over and over again across different industries and companies. But there are elements of everyone's business that are contextual, and that requires a different approach to make sure that some of these changes can land.
Technology is transforming how we think, how we lead, and how we win. From InnerVision, this is Status Go, the show helping IT leaders move beyond the status quo, master their craft, and propel their IT vision. Welcome to Status Go. I'm your host, Jeff Tun. To help you navigate changes to the status quo in the new year, InnerVision has compiled a list of predictions from experts with a keen eye on the market. Our 2019 Technology Predictions, The Year of Effective Transformations ebook is available now. Today, I'm excited to be joined by two of the contributors to the book. First up is InnerVision's own Paul Clement. Paul is the Director of Cloud and Automation Services. Welcome to the show, Paul. Before we dive into your predictions, why don't you take a moment to tell the audience about your role?
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Yes. So for me, you know, I've been in technology since 1997, but in 2010, I kind of dove headfirst when I left Symantec, an enterprise software company, and I joined Savvis. And I joined Savvis because at that time it was the leading cloud provider, and I really saw the future of where the industry was going. And then spent a couple of years there and then went to Rackspace and really just saw how managed services and OpenStack and public cloud can be so transformational. Then I had a short stint where I ran my own DevOps and consulting practice. And then about a year ago, joined InnerVision. And it's just been an exciting journey helping customers transform and move towards the cloud.
Paul, one of your predictions for 2019 is operations teams will financially measure the level of technical debt inhibiting digital transformation. What do you think is behind this, and why is this going to be so prominent in 2019?
Yeah, and what we're seeing is that this has been the driver for, or the justification, if you will, for customers really either A, adopting infrastructure automation in their own data center, or B, really picking up and moving applications and workloads to the public cloud. Because we've seen this time and again where, you know, IT is being said that they are slow. It takes teams 3 to 4 weeks to deliver VMs and storage. And while that's always been thought of as slow and it's just hard, there's never really been any kind of financial measure around it. So we've seen some customers that are starting to do this. We've actually helped a customer do this, and we're starting to help other customers do this, which is really looking at the financial technical debt associated with that slowness. And what's interesting is it's really found in the help desk. We've done some services engagements where we've looked at the amount of turnaround time on tickets, how much time tickets have been spent bouncing back and forth between IT teams. And it's really interesting. You can actually measure financially around the agility aspect of how that negatively impacts the business, how that impacts from an availability perspective. So when errors happen, because humans are involved with that, it can bring systems down. Those are the type of financial impacts that we're able to help IT teams show that this is really kind of how the operations is being run today, which is all manually. How that's really negatively impacting your ability to essentially digitally transform. So again, we're using this as a means to kind of either A, help customers justify that adoption to moving towards public cloud, or B, you know, bringing in the right automation tools to help them automate their on-prem infrastructure as well.
I think you are spot on there, Paul. One of the ways IT teams can reduce the impacts of technical debt is to automate, automate, automate. You make another prediction also related to automation under the IT resiliency section. You predict security teams will need to automate their tools within public cloud providers. What is driving this need, and why do you think it is imperative in 2019 and beyond?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Security teams will need to automate their tools within public cloud providers. And this really kind of talks to the fact that a lot of security teams will use native services within Amazon, Azure, and GCP. But those security services don't cover everything. So there's definitely a need to bring in third-party tools like next-generation firewalls, SIM systems, maybe other monitoring tools or such from a security perspective. But the problem with those external third-party tools is that they have to be agile and they have to be scalable, like the native tools found within the public cloud providers, in order to be effective. If they're not, they're really kind of causing technical debt on why customers want to move to the cloud, which is really around agility and speed. So that's the first piece, is definitely automating those tools. And it also begets a second point, which is the actual remediation piece. So it's not so much that, you know, now your tools are scalable and flexible, and I'm able to kind of collect all this information, but remediation has to happen at DevOps speed as well. And again, this is where companies like ours help, and there's others as well, where now that you have the tools in place, it's making sure that the actions are automated, you know, to a degree. Not everything can be automated, but when you look at a lot of the basic components of, you know, warnings or issues, those can absolutely be automated. So I definitely say those two pieces, definitely security tools, as well as the remediation processes.
You are so right. With the shared responsibility models the public cloud providers use for security, combined with the speed of deployments, automation will be the only way for teams to keep up. Paul, thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your insights in the 2019 Technology Predictions eBook.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it and love to do it again.
Our next guest is Michael Bouchon. Michael is the Vice President of Enterprise Marketing at Juniper. Michael, welcome to the show. To kick things off, tell us a little bit more about your role at Juniper and your background, how you got where you are today.
Sure. So I run Enterprise Marketing at Juniper Networks, which means I'm responsible for, you know, mainline enterprise networking, but also things like automation, cloud and multi-cloud, security. So I've got a fairly broad remit in terms of what I'm responsible for and really who I talk to. In terms of how I got here, I actually have a marketing title, but I'm more of a product person. Right? My background is product management, product strategy. I ran product management, product strategy, and product marketing for Junos, our flagship operating system. I was an executive at Plexi, a startup in the SDN space. I ran Brocade's data center and their software business. So I ran the whole business there. And interesting to these trends, I was quite early in the SDN space, very early in NFV, very early in DevOps. So I've got a reasonable idea of kind of what works and perhaps more importantly, what doesn't work as we look at these transitions.
Michael, one of the predictions you lent to this book was the repatriation of cloud workloads will continue, and people won't really know why. That is a provocative prediction. Tell me what you are seeing that leads you to the conclusion and the impact that that will have on 2019.
So I probably talked to 180 customers and partners in 2018, and every single one of them had some cloud or multi-cloud strategy. But when you start to peel away why they're moving to cloud and multi-cloud, I think it gets a little bit murky. A lot of people fundamentally don't understand what advantages they expect to get. Let me give you some examples. There's a belief that if you move to cloud, everything's going to be less expensive. But it's difficult to know if that's true if you don't have really good instrumentation of what you're spending today. You know, what are you spending in terms of people, headcount, What do your outside services look like? What is your infrastructure and CapEx spend? How do you handle things like support? How long does it take to get things done? What are your opportunity costs around management and operations? And so if you don't have it properly instrumented, then you set yourself up to move. And if you don't understand how that benefit is going to show up, if you've banked everything on kind of a cost benefit, if that doesn't materialize, then at some point people start to bring things back. And so, you know, that creates movement in the industry. The other thing I've learned in talking to everybody is the real compelling reason that people start to accelerate their change is usually not baked in a solid understanding of the technology. A lot of times people move because they perceive that everybody else is moving as well. And so when you see this kind of industry-wide movement to cloud, that creates pressure. And people who don't know, they sit there and they get a little bit of anxiety. And then you eventually leap, right? And if you leap for the wrong reasons, if you don't know why you're moving, you start to make these decisions. You'll whipsaw back and forth. So it's not that I don't think that cloud is relevant. In fact, we've baked our entire strategy on the premise that cloud and multi-cloud are the dominant ways forward. So I fully believe that's where things go. This was really more about the lack of instrumentation, the lack of understanding of the real drivers behind why to make the move. And I think those enterprises that understand that cloud is more about agility, it's about moving faster. The thing that you're purchasing from the cloud providers isn't rented servers. What you're leveraging is their operations. For the enterprises that understand that, they'll have a more successful move to cloud. For the ones that don't, they'll have an uneven move, and that will lead to some decisions that get made without really having the right data. And so I think that you will see some of these workloads be repatriated. And I think that they won't really have justifiable rationales in place to fully understand why they're making the move.
It is almost human nature to follow the crowd. It's like the questions our parents used to ask, well, if everyone jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge?
Yeah, in our industry, there's a real herd mentality. And I think that in some ways, it's a symptom of what we've done, where we've made the adoption of technology more difficult than just running the infrastructure. And so I think there's really a shift in the actual business problem to solve. It's no longer from a networking perspective or an IT infrastructure perspective. It's no longer only about connecting applications and users. We also have to solve the business level problem of how do you cope with change? And that requires a kind of a different way of thinking about things. And to some extent, it means that we have to collectively as an industry move away from the herd mentality and start making, you know, deliberate, you know, reasoned arguments about how to make some of these decisions. And this is actually why I think the channel, for instance, is particularly important. It's not about purveying goods. It's about, you know, really facilitating these migrations, which, as we all know, is more than product. It's relies on process and people as well.
Michael, you are so right that the adoption of technology is one of the largest challenges facing the IT leaders today. One of the things that you said really, really kind of takes us into that next prediction that you had, and you talked about business change and coping with change and looking at the problem from a different way. It's what I really liked about your prediction under data analytics and business intelligence. Your prediction was offshore oil platforms will become a model for modern IT. Explain that. What does offshore oil platforms have to do with IT?
Yeah, so offshore oil platforms are interesting. You have all this machinery, you have tons of sensors. When you think about kind of IoT, industrial IoT, I mean, in many ways, oil platforms are a very aggressive environment. They're remote, they're under tough conditions. You typically don't have dedicated staff to manage all the kind of the IT components to that. And so the question is, how do those work? And then they stand out relative to how the whole cloud model, how most of us think about it anyway. In the general cloud model, we probably, as we imagine in our minds, you probably picture like some central cloud. And the idea is that you need something. So you send information to the cloud, some application does something, and then it sends you the result back. That's how most people think about cloud. And the way to think about that is that we put the application in the cloud and then we move the data to the application, right? Because the user is at the edge. Now, in some cases, that's not practical. In the offshore oil example, you have all that sensor data, you have all that information, and there's no like broadband connection. They have a satellite link. In fact, on offshore oil platforms, they call it sneaker ops. The way they move data from the platform back into the data center is literally every 14 days they refresh the crew. Helicopter comes in, drops people off, picks up people, and they carry the information with them because it's faster to carry it physically than it is to transmit over a low bandwidth satellite link. And so if you think about that, if you have all this data and you have applications that need that data, but you have a link that doesn't support it, then the model of moving the data to the application, it falls apart, right? It doesn't work. So what we're going to see is a shift where instead we move the application to the data, right? So the cloud doesn't reside centrally. The cloud becomes distributed. Sometimes we call this distributed cloud, edge cloud, or multi-access edge computing, which is basically the idea that you can put small servers kind of at the edge and then handle the workloads, you know, locally. And it's not just oil platforms, things like autonomous vehicles. When you have road sensor data, do you want that data going up into Amazon and just depending that, you know, on that link? Or do you want those decisions being made sub-second so that you can react to real-time conditions on the road? Right, another good example. And so what I think we're going to see is this model where the application moves to the data. And for me, you know, this kind of the oil platform is a good stark way to think about it, because that satellite link is so limiting. And I think it ultimately is going to shape a little bit about how we evolve cloud going forward. And I think in 2019, people start talking a lot more about distributed cloud.
I love that example because it's an example that people wouldn't typically think of, an offshore oil rig. And it really kind of upholds the adage that every company is a tech company. Technology is just becoming so pervasive, and for companies to transform, no matter what industry, they're going to need technology.
That's a great point. So John Deere, right? 182-year-old company. Most of us, if we're familiar with the company, when I say John Deere, your first thought is a little green tractor. If you were to categorize John Deere today, they're not a tractor company anymore. I mean, they are a technology company. As we look at things like smart agriculture, you know, looking at using the combination of, you know, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and computer vision, their harvesters are no longer making kind of bulk decisions. What they do is they have little cameras that look at each individual plant and determine how much water does it need? How much pesticide does it need? You know, how do we make decisions where we can increase the yield, where we can reduce the cost and get more out of a space that really demands lower cost? That's an example where technology is reshaping an industry that we thought was, you know, kind of done innovating, you know, 100 years ago, right? So even these days, I think everybody is a technology company. And so our models and who we look to as kind of the visionaries, it's going to change. Another good example, just to kind of in the same space, there's a company called Tractor Supply. When I talked to the guys at Tractor Supply, my first question, you know, somewhat humorously was, you know, how many tractors did you guys sell last year? It's a rural lifestyle brand. They sell, you know, feed and random stuff. And in an age where everything is from an Amazon, as Amazon competes with us, where everything is kind of closing down and moving to the internet, you know, this company is opening 100 new stores a year. They're taking on the retail giant and widening their margins. And if you ask them why, it's because despite carrying all these goods, like in some cases, tractor supplies, you know, feed, pet food, you know, random things, they have 200,000 SKUs in their in a typical store. The reason they're able to succeed is because they've based their business on a digital, kind of a digital approach, and that allows them to compete with the most technical. And so I think with the oil platform, whether it's, you know, John Deere, whether it's Tractor Supply, what I want people to understand is that the conventional models for the future of IT are not necessarily the right models. Enterprises should not be looking at Google and saying, I want to be like Google, because Google has a different set of problems and a different set of operating conditions. They should be looking like, or looking at some of these other companies and evolving in the same way they have, so they can build out a successful business going forward.
That's exactly right. And it kind of circles back to what you said earlier about the herd mentality. You shouldn't be looking at the way everyone else solved a specific problem. You have to understand your objectives and your business goals before you can solve the problem that's in front of you and in front of your company. Not everyone will solve the problem the same way.
That's exactly right. And again, that gets to, you know, knowing your business and then working with people who also know your business. There's going to be an intimacy in terms of how we move technology forward, where some things will be, you know, kind of mass scale, where it's the same stamped out over and over again across different industries and companies. But there are elements of everyone's business that are contextual, and that requires a different approach to make sure that some of these changes can land. Again, understanding that it's more than just technology, we've got to bring the workforce along with us.
So, Michael, I want to move from talking about the offshore platforms and data analytics and move into the digital workplace. You made a prediction in that section related to certification. So let me just read you that prediction. Specialized certifications will precipitously drop in importance. And I would really love to pick your brain a bit on why you think that, because it seems like everybody likes to have that string of letters and acronyms after their name on their email or on their LinkedIn profile. So why is it that you think certifications in 2019 will not be as important?
So certifications, you know, historically have been the thing you put on your resume or your LinkedIn profile to demonstrate proficiency in a particular vendor's technology, right? The challenge is the future is not going to be these large single vendor environments. If we look at cloud and multi-cloud, that's going to be decidedly multi-vendor, right? It's difficult to imagine an enterprise-wide network all built with just one supplier. When technology is changing at the rate it is today, you kind of want to take advantage of innovation wherever it happens. And that requires us to start to integrate these things in a different way. Now, the implication of that, though, is pretty profound. If I move to a multi-vendor environment, then operations will no longer be necessarily just this device or that device or even this collection of devices. And so two things are true. One, you elevate above the CLI. So earlier I mentioned intent. The reason I believe intent matters is that it gives us an abstracted way of controlling things. And so even though I don't think that that's going to dominate operations in 2019, I think that what you're going to see is that as companies build out their talent, their skills, their workforces to support an environment that's more abstracted, they're going to need people who operate not in the CLI, but above the CLI. The second thing is that the workflows themselves tend to be less device-centric, right? It's more about what am I doing for the application? What am I doing? How am I troubleshooting a particular workflow? And as we move to more workflow-oriented jobs and operations, it just changes the role of these certifications. You know, if I'm hiring today, am I looking for the next CCIE, the next JNCIE? I'm probably not. If I'm hiring today, I'm probably looking for people who have skills in cloud. You know, hopefully they're proficient in, you know, AWS, Azure, Google, GCP, you know, ideally more than one of those, by the way, because my customers are going to have different needs, or my business will have different needs. And on top of that, I probably hope that they know something about containers. They're probably proficient in open source. They might know something about, you know, things like Terraform or, you know, Kubernetes. There's a lot of different kind of skills, and those skills just aren't captured by the certifications anymore. And so it's not that I think the certifications go away overnight. But I think, yeah, this is going to be the beginning of a major change in how we evaluate and ultimately value our workforce. And so if I'm talking to folks who are planning their careers in IT, if I'm talking to teams that are looking at how to hire, I would start to encourage people to look at a different set of skills. not just experience with the tools I talked about, but perhaps they've got familiarity with maybe a programming language. You know, perhaps they're, you know, proficient in Go or Python. You know, these tools will change. And as the tools change, of course, you know, how we determine whether people know these tools or not, that's going to change. And so, maybe sadly for the industry, but I think that the days are numbered for like a CCIE being your path into riches.
You're right. It may be sad for the industry in some ways. I see it really as a double-edged sword because it's going to make it harder for that person who is trying to build their career, extend their career. And it used to be they'd just get the next certification, right? And so now how do they map that out and how do they move forward in their career without chasing that next certification? But then when you look at it from the HR perspective, if they have the skills that are required to do the job, they may not need those certifications specifically to get that. So what's the IT person to do to improve their career and continue to move forward in 2019 and beyond?
So interesting, somewhere along the way, the certification path kind of got sidetracked, in my opinion. I think in general, we started off teaching technologies and teaching networking and teaching how it all worked and how to architect and plan and think about things. But where we ended up was testing for your knowledge of the CLI. It was rote memorization of complex workflows to see how quickly you could configure a device under time duress, right? And that's kind of where we ended up. That's why training for these things is so hard. You know, in some ways, I think we're actually going back to first principles, which is understand, you know, kind of how we build things. I understand the technology that underpins it. You know, we may not have to understand the bits and bytes to the same degree that we had to. I mean, hopefully we can elevate above that. You know, to some extent, technology should make things easier. But I don't think that gives us a free pass from understanding the principles of how these things come together, particularly for anybody who wants to operate these, especially, you know, to, like during times of troubleshooting, as an example. So I think what I would tell people is, look, make sure you understand first principles, understand how things work, and then start to elevate. I mean, if we know that cloud is the next thing, I mean, make sure you understand probably two or three of the major cloud providers. In the US, obviously that's AWS, Azure, and GCP. In non-US areas, I think we need to expand to include some of the other large cloud providers. You know, Alibaba is an example. And then once you build that, then if you look at cloud as kind of an operational condition, then what are the operational tools, right? So do you understand, again, first principles of things like DevOps and continuous integration, continuous delivery? Do you understand first principles of things like data structures? Do you understand, you know, how we can structure data to get programmatic access to things? Do you understand, you know, in some cases, a programming language? Even just one is enough to get started, something like, you know, like Go or Python or R. And then there's, of course, there's a host of tools and open source projects. You know, I actually think one of the things that's going to be more important going forward is familiarity with navigating open source. Like, do you understand how to work with the open source community? That's more than just downloading a project and getting some code, right? You have to understand how do you interact so that your needs can be fulfilled, because the training and support model are very different. Things like managing the supply chain are very different. So there's a lot of extra things that go in there. And so if I'm an individual who's starting off down this path, you know, one way to look at it is, yeah, it's a little bit more difficult because the path hasn't already been walked by, you know, 55,000 people, you know, but the positive of that is that because it hasn't been walked, I mean, we're in the formative years, the opportunity is greater. I mean, the first people who walked the certification path, they were able to monetize their skills in a way that was different than, say, the last people down that path. And so now, to kind of steal Robert Frost, right? You know, there's two paths. Which do you take, right? Taking the path less traveled, you know, means that your skills are going to be in demand. I think it's a great way to plan a career. If I was starting my career now, I'd be excited, to be honest.
Michael, thank you for talking with us today. I have enjoyed our conversation.
It has been absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
Want to get a copy of the ebook or ask a question? Go to innervision.com. The show notes will provide links and contact information. This is Jeff Tun for Paul Clement and Michael Bouchon. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to the Status Go podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes or get more information at intervision.com. If you'd like to contribute to the conversation, find Intervision on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. Thank you for listening. Until next time.